Okay, we are at Jennifer Lundberg's house, and it is March the 23rd, 2004. We're doing an interview, and I'm Kara Buick. So we'll just start with where you grew up.
Born, raised Wisconsin, northwestern part, Hudson, which is actually right on the Saint Clair River, across Minneapolis-St. Paul. Okay. So it was a small town, but we basically grew up in Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
What did your family do?
My father was a mechanic at Northwest Airlines, and my mother worked at a, what was the name of it? She worked in the data resource center for, Data Controls was the name of the company, and she was like in the stock area mm-hmm. where they keep their supplies mm-hmm. when I was growing up. And then she came in town and worked at school as a cook when I was, well, I guess in high school, or just, you know, getting out of school kind of mm-hmm. thing. But I had a younger brother, so she needed to be home closer to here. Uh-huh. I have three brothers. I had three brothers. I have two now. I'm the second oldest and was very much taken care of, I guess. Uh-huh. You know, my oldest brother, and then 1 year younger, and then my youngest brother 7 years younger. So I think a very typical family mm-hmm. growing up in those days. I was very fortunate. We were a very solid family. We didn't have a lot of problems. I mean, you know, in that there wasn't the family bickering and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I mean, when you see in some families, but anyway, so it was a very typical. We like I said, my father was a mechanic at Northwest, and he was always very proud of always having meat on the table and shoes on the feet. He always said that. He's my God, my family's always, but you know, it was like everybody else in those times. If he went on strike, I mean, it was mean. It was real mean. As far as things, extra things you could have. I mean, shoes, you got shoes for Easter and you got shoes for Christmas and, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But it was a good solid, it was a good foundation for me. Mm-hmm. My parents were very, be independent. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think they really encouraged the independency part of it. Mm-hmm. And being the only girl, I think that probably made me a little bit more independent. If you talk to my brothers, I was spoiled rotten, but I don't know that that's real true. But I was daddy's little girl, there's no question about that. Uh-huh. Growing up, I don't know what else you want to know as far as that background. I mean, it was a small high school, actually I can remember our classes being friends. Mm-hmm. Rather than pairing up and dating and stuff, we were just all friends. I mean, we just all partied together. But again, it was a small community, small high school kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. And were either of your parents in the military?
Actually, they both were. During World War II. Neither one of them were career officers. My dad was in the Army. He was did the European tour. Was over there 3 years. Did the Battle of the Bulge and kind of that theater. Mom was in the Navy, was a WAVE in the Navy, and was stationed in D.C. the whole time. And she used to tell us that they used to live in barracks on the Mall there. And so, yeah, so they were pretty, my father died before I went into the military, but my mother was pretty supportive, mm-hmm. which was a lot different than some of my friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, their parents certainly were not supportive about going in the military.
Mm-hmm. Had you thought about a military career?
I never did. I tell you, it was kind of funny. My roommate in nursing school, I went to Arthur B. Anker Nursing School in St. Paul, which is a 3-year diploma school, mm-hmm. and you basically go there and you live. And we were walking back from supper one night, and there were people that were giving a film on Vietnam. They were obviously in a recruitment group. Mm-hmm. In our gymnasium, and Nan says, "Let's go watch this thing." And I said, "Fine." So we go in, you know. Oh my God! And that was really the first time I ever really thought about it. And we were going to go into the buddy system. Man, I went on the buddy system. We were going to have this great adventure. And between that film, and that was must have been thinking maybe the end of my freshman year. But anyway, they had, no, it wasn't. It must have been the junior year, because they had an Army Nurse Fund scholarship thing. My father had just died recently before I'd seen this movie, and so money was an issue. I had a brother, my oldest brother was in college, and then I was in school, and we just didn't have that kind of money. I mean, we were paying tuition paycheck to paycheck kind of a thing. And so it was, I think probably the scholarship was what really got me interested, more so than anything else, more so than, oh, I want to go to Vietnam or anything. I just really needed the money to finish up school. And so that's, I mean, I didn't join up that night, but that's really got me going. And then the recruiters came by, of course, and that's when I joined up.
Do you remember much about the recruiters? Who they were or what they said?
No, I really don't. You know, I really don't I don't have any impressions from that at all. I just don't.
But you knew that you could go with your friend and you guys would be stationed together?
Well, that was the plan, but of course Nan didn't do that. And I still remember to this day, because we're still very good friends. So she never did go, and so I went by myself. Actually, out of my class, there were 96 of us in that nursing class, and three went into the Navy, and then I went into the Army. We're the only, there were four out of 96 that went into the military, which I don't think is a very high number back then. I mean, this was, I graduated in 70, June of 70 from nursing school. And, you know, there was a lot out then with the Vietnam War and everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but anyway, that was, I went alone. And actually I graduated in June, and we weren't able to go in to basic training until we had our state boards back.
Mm-hmm.
So that summer, I was a camp nurse with some of my friends up in upper state New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then September, I went to basic training and then went over.
Mm-hmm. And what made you choose the Army? Some of your friends went to the Navy. Was
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there wasn't any specific reason, other than, I mean, I saw this film, you know, and I just really didn't give it much thought, I guess.
What did the film say?
The film was, my recollections of the film was there was, you know, the helicopters and the flying of the wounded, and then the MASH units, and then the ORs and the ERs where they're running around with their scrubs and taking care of these guys and stuff. And, you know, as a young nurse, that was very exciting. That was just, you know. And my dad was one who never really talked about the military unless you sat him down and just said, "Dad, tell me," kind of a thing. So I mean, I didn't really have a whole lot of influence from that direction. It was just, and I guess I mean, truly, that's kind of run through my whole life. Things just kind of happen. You know, I'm a believer that things happen for a reason, and if I'm going that direction, if there's no obstacles in my way, I just kind of keep going that direction. There's not always a lot of forethought or reasoning why I end up doing half the stuff I do, I guess. But I don't know, it just sounded exciting. I think that was probably the biggest thing. And I don't know why the other gals decided to go Navy. They weren't real close friends of mine. I mean, I knew them, obviously. We went to school for 3 years. But not that they were, it wasn't the group that I hung out with. The group that I hung out with, that I was just nuts, but besides that.
And why did you want to be a nurse? Was that something you decided early in life? Or?
No, not really either, but you know, when I was growing up, you were either a teacher or a nurse. I mean, that was basically the two professional roles you went, and never wanted to be a teacher, still don't want to be a teacher. And, you know, I worked at the hospital when I was in high school, in the kitchen. They had like six of us high school kids who did the dishes and, you know, helped serve the desserts and whatever. And I guess, you know, that was kind of neat. I mean, I like being around the hospital atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And then once I decided to go into nursing, I spent that last year, or that last, the last year, it had to be eight, it had to be, anyway, as a nursing assistant in mm-hmm. the hospital. And then I thought, yeah, this is okay. I liked it, and I love nursing. Mm-hmm. I spent, 25 years at the bedside, mm-hmm. being, you know, before I took off and went to the management side. So mm-hmm. it was.
And did you know what kind of nursing you wanted to do?
No. One thing nice about the diploma program is we got hands-on in a lot of different fields. Mm-hmm. When I came out of nursing school, I knew I did not want to be an OBGYN. Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't want to be peds. But and I didn't want to be surgery. I mean, I knew I tended towards the med-surg track. Mm-hmm. When I got to Vietnam, I spent 3 months in the med-surg unit, which was my choice, and then was asked to go to the emergency room, and which I did for the last months of my tour, and I ended up staying in critical care almost my whole nursing career, except. You know, when I got out and went into management, but so I didn't really have a defined. When I came back, my father died young, 49, of a heart attack, and so I kind of got drawn into this cardiac thing, and worked most of my career in coronary care, and then kind of went out a little bit more in just general ICU and stuff. But other than that, no, I just kind of flowed. The opportunities are there. And, mm-hmm.
Did you want a career? You said you could be either a nurse or a teacher. Did you really think about a career, or did you think, maybe I'll do this for a while? Was marriage a question? Or
well, I think that about? Marriage and a family was always was just an understanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't happen, but it's always been an understanding. So I think, you know, growing up, my mother always had to work. I mean, we were always a two-income family. For most of the time that I can remember. And so I think it was just like that's just something you did. I mean, I had to have something to do to make money, and that seemed like a decent thing to do to make money. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about career goals mm-hmm. at that point, certainly not at that point mm-hmm. anyway. Mm-hmm. It was probably a good 15 years into it before I was like, well, you know, what do you want to do with your life? You know, we're getting on here. Not really.
So you graduated in June of 70 from
yeah,
nursing school,
nursing
and you
school.
Went to basic in the fall.
Yes, September of 70.
Mm-hmm. And you went to Fort Sam Houston?
Yeah, for basic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did you do there?
Oh, God. We partied hardy is what we did. You know, we used to tease. It was like, what do you do in basic was learning how to stay awake all day while you partied all night. And it was, you know, it was during like I say, September of 70, and so Fort Sam was full. I mean, they didn't have any BOQs available because there was so much training going on. Mm-hmm. So they put us up at the San Antonio Inn. Oh my God. And it was a wonderful time. I mean, we truly just, and everybody, not particularly the nurses, but all the guys with us knew they were going to Vietnam. And so this was the last hooray. And we did. We were young, and I can say we did a lot of foolish things, but we certainly partied hardy. Mm-hmm. So, and then, like I say, during basic, we spent 2 weeks out of Fort Bullis, and that's probably the only time in that whole 2 weeks that we really were challenged by anything, and that was just merely living in the field for 2 weeks and, you know, all those things that you give up after living in a hotel for a few weeks. Basic was, you know, one class that we always laugh about is it was a training on how to get in and out of a car with your skirt, with your Class A's on. You know, it's not to be the lady. And this lady was up there, some colonel, I guess, and says, and somebody asked the question, well, how do you get out of the back seat of a car? She goes, officers do not get into back seats of cars. Okay, we'll remember that one. We didn't discuss getting into the back seat of a Jeep, though, which is what we found ourselves getting in and out of. So, so there was some of that still there, you know. You had to be the lady, you know. We didn't have courses in makeup by any means, but we certainly did in adequate etiquette and what was expected and those types of things.
What
officers do and don't do. Officers don't. If you're gonna, well, one of the things, if you're gonna hit somebody in your car, my God, it better not be an officer. Let it be an enlisted person. Because if it's an officer, you will never get through the paperwork, is kind of what they said. But you know, a lot of that is just military protocol more than being a lady. It's, you know, a lot of it is what we were being taught was the officer etiquette and what you as an officer need to expect and demand out of the enlisted people, and out of the, you know, your fellow officers and stuff. I really don't remember having any issues or any discussions regarding if you get into a situation, if you feel like you're compromised, you know. I mean, I think those were just kind of basic kind of stuff that everybody expected you knew. But it's just that car thing and dressing appropriately and wearing your uniform appropriately and, you know, those kinds of things. So. But it was a great 6 weeks.
And you have more nursing classes?
No, there was no nursing classes at all. It was all military classes, indoctrination into the military. What the rank, I mean, we went in there, we didn't know what rank was, much less how to wear it or how to tell it on somebody else. It was just kind of those basic things.
And when did you get your first assignment?
Right out of basic. While we were in basic, we got our first assignments. And I went to Fort Gordon, Georgia.
And did you request to go there?
No. But it didn't make any difference to me where I went. I didn't know anybody else, so it just didn't matter. And it turned out to be a wonderful assignment. I had gone with a couple other girls from basic, and we ended up getting an apartment, so we, you know, lived together. And it was, the Signal School was at Fort Gordon at that time. And again, you've got all these young guys running around that knew they were heading off to Vietnam. And so there was a real camaraderie that I had. I mean, I had our high school class was closed, and of course our nursing class was closed, so I was kind of used to that kind of environment. And this was just the same. I mean, even though we were all from parts around the world, never seen each other, it didn't take long to really become a solid group. We lived off post, because again, there was just no BOQs available anywhere. But the complex we lived in had a lot of military people in it. And of course, at that point, everybody I knew in the military was single. We were all single officers. And this whole building we were in were all single officers. And I mean, the group upstairs, I mean, the doors, you never locked your door. There were guys around all the time. People were walking in, walking out. I mean, it was like you had a four-bedroom home, and people were, I mean, your bedroom is, or your apartment is my apartment kind of a thing, and of course, we were the only girls, and all the other apartments were all the guys, and so everybody hung out in our apartment, because they didn't know how to cook, not that we knew how to cook, but we could cook better than they could cook, and, you know, so it was always, I'm running to the store, what do you need, or, you know, we're cooking out tonight, right, because we had a picnic table and stuff, we cooked out like all the time. And the guys would always go buy the meat and throw it on the grill, and then we'd, you know, cook the rest. So it was a real camaraderie. I mean, it really was. It was, I think that's what makes the military what it is just that closeness.
And what ward did you work on?
It was a med-surg ward. I don't remember the name of it. I don't remember what the number or anything was. And I worked in the med-surg ward. It was we did a lot of hepatitis. We did a lot of just general internal medicine. We'd gotten a couple of malaria guys back from overseas. Hepatitis is what I remember the most. A couple, I mean, even a couple of TVs. It was the first time that, I mean, our patients were all, you know, our patients were mostly young guys. I mean, mostly they were active duty military, either from post or from off. And I was there, I worked the unit the whole time. I worked that med-surg unit the whole time before I went over, and I was there about, I want to say 6 months before I went over to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And then I came back to Fort Gordon from Vietnam because my two-year commitment wasn't up yet. And so I went back to finish out my commitment there, and then I ended up in the ER, the last, because I'd had the ER experience, and now they put me back in the ER. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so when did you get your orders for Vietnam?
I left in April. I mean, I don't mean April. I left in July, so I'm thinking I got them in April. You know, I think I got them right after my birthday in April. And I had requested Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. What made you request it?
You know, I figured if I'm going to do this, I might as well do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was kind of why I came in, you know, that's kind of what got me going to get in there. And I don't know, it was just something I wanted to do. And to be honest with you, I knew very little about it. Mm-hmm. I really did, which was probably why I wanted to go. But I just wanted to go. But I never told my mother. I never told her I requested orders. She never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And I never told my brothers because I didn't trust them, not to tell her. So I think I got them right like in April, May, June. Couldn't have been that long. Maybe I got them. I don't think I had them more than 6 to 8 weeks before I left, if I remember right. And because it was kind of a quick, because when I went in to request them, they said, well, we don't need nurses in Vietnam anymore because we're coming home. We don't, you know, we're winding down and we don't have as many slots over there.
This was 71.
This was 71. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, whatever, but I'd still like to go. You know, so it wasn't. It was probably 6 weeks after I put my request in in April. I think that's the way it was. And then it was less than 6 weeks later that I got them. And then I was on the plane in July. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was kind of a short suspense in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what did your mom say when she found out you had to get
them? Oh, woe is me. I have three boys and my daughter goes to Vietnam. And I kept saying, Mom, you know, I said, my two younger brothers were two, they were still in high school. I mean, they were too young. And my oldest brother, who was in college, had a deferment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, Mom, I said, of all of us, I'm the safest one to go. I'm the best one to go. You know, nurses are protected over there. You don't want the boys out with their rifles or whatever. So, she had that piece, woe is me, but she was very supportive. I mean, when she kind of got past that, she said, I know your dad would be proud and all that kind of stuff. So she did okay, but I don't think she would have done as well if she knew that I had requested to go. I just, you know, I've held very little back from my mother growing up. I mean, we had our traditional times, but that piece, I just don't think she would have done well with that.
Mm-hmm. Did she approve of you joining the nurse corps in the first place?
Yeah, she did. That was okay, and she certainly understood the need that we needed the money to do that. Mm-hmm. If I was going to finish my education, that had to come from somewhere, and so in some aspects, that was a relief.
Mm-hmm.
I think she felt good that at least I would get, because I think she was really concerned that I was going to be able to, you know, back then, whatever, if somebody had to drop out of school, it was going to be the girl and not the boy. And my oldest brother was very much, much more academic than I was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even back then, I would have realized that it was more important for him to go, or if we had to make decisions like that. Because he was the type of guy that if we got him through, he would turn around and help me through.
Mm-hmm.
And I would help the next guy. And that was kind of, as a family, what we had talked about, if we got to the point we had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a relief in some aspects. And the thing, you know, like I say, she was very proud of having been in the military.
Mm-hmm.
She thought that she served her country well. And so now she never had any problems with that. Or at least she never indicated mm-hmm. to me she ever had a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. And so you left in June, 71.
I was actually left on July 3rd, and I landed on July 5th. I never had a 4th of July that year, because mm-hmm. that was the year I crossed the international date line. So I got in country on July 5th.
Mm-hmm. And we landed at Long Bend?
At Long Bend.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit. And it was kind of funny. Have you read, I just read it, A World of Hurt.
I'm reading it right now. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have read, I don't want to get off the subject, but I have read many of the books that have come out.
Mm-hmm.
And in most of them, it was like I could pick out this and pick out that and relate to this and relate to that. But this book, when I finished reading it, I called my girlfriend who gave it to me, and I said, you know, I felt like she was wearing my boots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so true. Of course, you know, I've got this take and that take, but that was probably the most, it is the most most like the experience that I experienced while I was over there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just laughed out loud when she was talking about flying into Vietnam and saying, what the hell have I done?
Mm-hmm.
I can clearly remember saying, I have done some stupid things in my life, but baby, this is it, you know. And when we flew into Benoit, they're giving us this, when you hit the tarmac, you know, if you hear shooting, you know. And we're in Class B's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're in nylons and skirts, and I'm going in high heels, and I'm going, oh my God, this is stupid, you know. So that was just funny, but we got in there. I went a little bit later than she did, so
uh-huh.
we didn't take any fire on the tarmac. We thought they were just
uh-huh.
being, you know, obnoxious. But anyway.
So you got there and they gave you your assignment for where you would be.
Well, we went to the 90th replacement,
mm-hmm.
and so we didn't know at the 90th is where you got your assignments.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for like 8 days. It was a long time. Usually you were in and out of there in 3 or 4 days, and they kept saying, well, I don't know what's going on here. And I was the only nurse there. But anyway, I had a choice. Actually, my first assignment was up north. And I don't remember where. Someplace up north. Chulai, maybe. I think it sounds familiar. But then this other gal who came in after, we came in together. And then she really wanted to go to Chulai because she had a friend up there. And I said, it doesn't make any difference to me. I know one person at the third surge, and we weren't close friends, but, you know, we were in basic together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, fine, you know, that's okay with the chief nurse, I don't care.
Hey, Jen, this is Dale.
That's my boss.
I'm going to be kind of doing an interview. However, I wanted to let you know that we've changed the time for the information planning call. 1 o'clock
your
time,
12 o'clock
my time, and I will call you on your
phone
book.
Okay.
Then,
bye-bye.
What was I rambling about?
I'm getting your assignment. Then,
she wanted to go to Chulai, so I said, it didn't make any difference to me. So the chief nurse said, that's fine, so she went to Chulai. And then, for whatever reason, it took a couple more days, but I ended up down to the third surge
mm-hmm.
with Patty, who I knew from basic training.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where I met Peggy and Mary and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got down there. I don't even know. And like I say, I think I spent 8 days at the 90th
mm-hmm.
and then got down there.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think when you got there?
Well, I think probably, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was so glad. I mean, the trip from leaving to actually getting there was absolutely exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Spending 8 days at the 90th with absolutely nothing to do was exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I was just exhausted. I mean, when I got down there, I just thought, oh, all I want is a bed. When I saw Patty, it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It was somebody that I knew, and you kind of look around and you just think, there's no way to Well, I had some, you know, idea from having been in Saigon, you know, kind of what the heat and the smells and all those things. So that wasn't so, I mean, that wasn't, it wasn't as bad down there at the third surge as it was at the 90th.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a relief. But I just thought, well, let's just get going, just get me in the hospital where I'm comfortable, and the rest will just kind of fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
what was your first assignment at the hospital? What ward did you?
Med-surg ward.
Uh-huh.
It was a small hospital. It was a surgical hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So we really had one unit for the GIs, and then we had the ICU, the ER, the OR, and then a Vietnamese ward.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was the whole hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say there were like 40 beds, but then that didn't count the Vietnamese ward. Then there was, you know, more down there.
Mm-hmm.
But between the ICU and our unit, I think there were like 40 beds.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so I was at the started me off at the unit, and then went down to the ER, I don't know, maybe 3-4 months into it.
Mm-hmm. And did you like one position better?
No, I liked them both but they were both so different.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the ward because you had a chance to get to know the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ER, as a young nurse, that experience was remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you don't have the time or the capacity, really, to get to know the guys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's truly a technical function when you work in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, we never visited the guys. I mean, we get pulled into ICU to help. I mean, you just kind of follow the flow through. I mean, if you've got 15, 20 guys that come into the ER, then your ICU and your ward, everybody kind of comes to the ER because you don't have enough nurses to take care of that kind of, you know, even with the corpsman. And so then everybody kind of follows them through, so then they go into the OR, so then you're doing pre-op. I mean, so you just kind of follow the whole thing through. So we went and helped with the ICU, and then by the time it got down to the wards, it wasn't a problem because they trickled through the OR. You know,
mm-hmm.
We only had two ORs going, so that they were able to handle it down there. But like I say, we never, as much, even having worked the unit, even having worked the ward, and really enjoyed getting to know the guys and that kind of stuff, even when we went to the ER, we never went back and saw those guys again.
Mm-hmm.
It, you would think that the units were 7 miles apart. I mean, it was really kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it was, your bucket's full. There's no more room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you work 6 days a week, 12-hour shifts?
Yeah, 6 days a week, 12-hour. And then what would happen is after you'd work 7 years, you work your 6 days. When you were on the night shift, so you'd get off at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then you'd have to be back to work at 7 o'clock that night.
Mm-hmm.
But that was your day off. So you really only got, but every other week you got a day and a half off, because when you're coming off of day shift, you get from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., and then you get an extra day.
Uh-huh.
So you get a day and a half off every other week, and then you get 14 hours off.
Uh-huh.
So, but on that day and a half, see, then we could go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go to Saigon or do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you could swap around. If we weren't too busy, people would be able to swap around and work an extra 4 hours for somebody, so you could have like almost two full days off and,
mm-hmm.
and go up and do something. And we did that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we were able to get out. We didn't do it a lot, but
mm-hmm.
we were able to get out a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of places did you go?
Well, Saigon, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Saigon and Ben Long and Bintui were all, I mean, not Bintui, but Long Ben and Benoit and Saigon were always kind of like the same place almost. And then, of course, we had our R&Rs, but that was different. But in country, we went to Vinh Long a couple of times, and there had a beach in Ben Long, but we never really got, I mean, we went to the beach, but we never got up there to lay on the beach or anything like that. By the time we found your, you'd have to go down and hitch a ride.
Mm-hmm.
So you're standing on the tarmac by the time you could get a ride up there, and then a day and a half isn't that much. So we, you know, just kind of bummed around. When we went to Saigon, we stayed, I don't even remember where we stayed. I guess we stayed at the hospital, BOQ. And then they had a big officers club up there, and oh my God, we went and had ice cream at the USO. We thought we died and gone to heaven, because it wasn't the ice cream that we'd get was kind of that. It was almost like Italian ice, where you get all those little chunks of ice in it. Anyway, but we went in order to. Oh, one day we went out. Patty and I were going to go to Saigon,
mm-hmm.
and Patty, bless her heart. I mean, she's always a day late and a dollar short. So, of course, we miss our flight. We miss the chopper ride that we had kind of rearranged with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
They said, Jan, we got to go. I said, just go. I'll wait for Patty. We'll do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, we got it on. Then we ended up getting on what they called this Beaver. And it was a real small plane. I don't know what kind it was, but a real small plane. And there the pilot and the co-pilot. And then Patty and I sat back here on the mail. I mean, it was a mail train. It was a mail flight. So we literally sat on the mail things, and they told us before we left, and we just said, well, as long as nothing happens, we're okay, because they were flying to Phnom Penh, Cambodia, and of course we were not allowed
mm-hmm.
out of country. And so of course we stopped in Phnom Penh, and of course Patty and I were like, we gotta go to the bathroom. So we got out and came back, and nothing happened. We were fine, so we took off from Phnom Penh and then ended up in Saigon, where we were supposed to go. When we got back to the hospital, and I have no idea how the chief nurse found out we went to Phnom Penh. I have no idea. And so we got back, and she said, I understand you ladies were in Phnom Penh. Phnom Penh? Where's that, you know? No, I don't think we were there. Of course, I have pictures of Phnom Penh Airport, you know. So anyway, she says, well, I couldn't have believed that you would have done that. So I'm just glad you're back and, you know, nothing else going on, so. But that was kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. And were your chief nurses strict?
Our first chief nurse was strict.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Cardio. She was a little petite thing, dark hair, God, I remember her, oh. But she wasn't there that long.
Mm-hmm.
She was probably there, I mean, after I got there, she was there her full tour, but I came in at the end of her tour. And she wasn't, you know, it's kind of this, there's a real difference. When you get to the end of the tour, you
mm-hmm.
can't, and you don't, it's like you don't have enough energy to invest in a lot of the new people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're nice to them, but you're not gonna go out of your way, because you're just not.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of almost got that from her too. I mean, she was nice, and she was my chief nurse, and you know, I respected
mm-hmm.
her because she was my chief nurse, but I never got the impression she liked us very much.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say us, there was a group of us, and we called ourselves the Original Delta Brats, and there were five of us. And I just don't think that Colonel Cardio had enough energy for us, to tell you the truth. And so she was kind of strict in that she really didn't want us to be doing some of the things we were doing. So, and you know, I mean, we showed up for work. We were never late for work. I mean, we were good nurses for being as young as we were. I mean, really. And never disrespectful or anything, but you know, we just figured that when we got off work at 7 o'clock at night, we had 12 hours that were ours,
mm-hmm.
and we took advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. We did a lot of partying over there. As a matter of fact, when I came home, I went on the wagon. I just knew I was going to have a drinking problem, or I did have a drinking problem, because we just
mm-hmm.
drank so much. And fortunately, I didn't and never have had, but that scared me. I mean, I just thought, I mean, I bet I didn't have a drink for 3 years after I came back.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nothing to go over to the officers' club and drink a half a bottle of Jim Beam by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that kind of tolerance is scary when you stop to think about it. But anyway, So we partied. Well, at the officer club, we met a bunch of helicopter pilots from Canto, and Canto was probably, I don't think it was any more than 3 or 5 miles from where we were. It was another complex.
Mm-hmm.
But the, so we used to go over there to their officers club and party, because they had a big officers club and they had live bands, and we didn't have that at the small officers club at the hospital. But anyway, Colonel Tardio didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't. And you know, now that I'm older and have had to manage people, I understand that. I know, for us to be out of her realm of control, and yet for her to be responsible, I understand that now, but I didn't understand that back then. We just thought she was being, we even invited her to go with us, but that didn't help either, so. Yeah, but anyway, so she left, and then Colonel Metcalf came in, and she was just a doll.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Metcalf was the sweetest lady I'd ever met, and she used to come up and party with us. I mean, I had, last night I was looking through the photo album, and I thought, where'd that picture go? And then I remember I had sent it to her, but I had a wonderful picture. It was a party in my room. I had a double room, so I had a lot of the parties in my room. And she was standing there with a bottle of beer and just as her, you know, her great smile. And I sent that to her when she was sick before she died. She died of cancer. She was at the 10th year reunion with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she died about a year and a half after that. But anyway, I remember giving her that snapshot,
mm-hmm.
you know, of us. See, I started rambling in, then I don't know where I'm at. So anyway, Colonel Metcalf was a wonderful leader.
Mm-hmm.
She had the ability to lead and to get it done right, but she was more of a big sister, more
uh-huh.
of a friend.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember when we came in, and she'd gone through, obviously when she first came in, she'd gone through our personnel records and stuff, and she called us in individually. And I remember going in there and saying, Lieutenant Lindbergh, this file here, did you do all this? And I said, ma'am, I haven't seen the file, so I really don't know what's in there. Well, now, this said you were stuck out, you know, you were in a red alert and you were out of Canto. I said, well, you know, that did happen that night. Yeah, that did. And she says, do you know what your mistake was? And I said, no, ma'am. She goes, you came back. You came back during a red alert. Don't do that. Next time, stay over there. Okay, we can do that. So she really understood,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she really, I mean, her, even though she wanted the safety of her girls
mm-hmm.
as much as Colonel Tardio did, she did it in a much different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been much smarter to stay at Canto than to come back in a red alert. Well, first of all, we didn't know it was a red alert.
Mm-hmm.
But in so anyway, but she was great.
Mm-hmm.
She really, you knew if you had a problem, you could go. And we never had bickering and problems. I mean,
mm-hmm.
between the nurses and the docs, there was never any of that stuff. Or at least I wasn't involved in it. And I don't remember hearing stuff about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, I mean, it was a real give and take. It was, if the choppers came, if you were sitting at this swimming pool, which was a mainstay for us, it was a God-given swimming pool, but it was situated in that you could see all the choppers coming in, you know. And if you got more than 2 choppers coming in one after another, then you packed up and went.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were an ER staff, then you packed up and went because you know what those kids are going through.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we used to literally, we kept a uniform in the emergency room. So if we were at the pool, we didn't have to go back and change. We just ran to the emergency room,
mm-hmm.
threw on our uniform, and we were there to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it was. I mean, that's, you expected it.
Mm-hmm.
You did it for others, and you expected others to do it for you. So that was more the atmosphere that
mm-hmm.
Colonel Metcalf was able to bring together.
Mm-hmm. And what about the corpsmen? You said you got along with the doctors. Did you get along with the
corpsmen? Corpsmen were wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
The corpsmen knew more than we did.
Mm-hmm.
Those in the emergency room, oh, my God. They taught me how to put chest tubes in. The corpsmen did.
Mm-hmm.
Docs didn't have time for that kind of stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They were wonderful. We never partied with them. We didn't party with them.
Right.
They were enlisted. Although we did party with some enlisted people, but not the corpsmen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know why. I mean, we were really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
there were like five or six of them that we would have done anything for, anything, because they were that good, and we just depended on them that much.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really partied with them, per se.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple guys that came over from the Army. There was the hospital compound, and then they had a Navy SEAL compound, and then there was an Army engineer compound. And so these guys came up from the Army engineers, and they were enlisted, but they were, one was a swimming pool, was the lifesaver.
Mm-hmm.
At the swimming pool, and a couple of his friends, and I don't remember what lunch he did, but they were enlisted, but for whatever reason, we started, you know, partying with them too. But
mm-hmm.
So it wasn't so much your, I mean, there was a divide between enlisted and officer,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't a friendship divide, but it was a party divide.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we really, when we had some sniper activity in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I tell you, I didn't know what happened. All of a sudden, literally, I had four corpsmen standing around me with guns.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what happened, I mean, I was, there was no way. We didn't have guns.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't issued weapons of any kind, but the guys did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were, and they did. I mean, they just,
mm-hmm.
nobody was getting to their nurses, and that's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, and did you feel like you were in danger during the war?
The only time I felt I was in danger was when we had snipers inside the building.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, we had, and that was twice that I remember,
mm-hmm.
twice the whole time I was over there that happened. And I don't know that they were really inside the building,
mm-hmm.
but that was what the concern was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly you could hear the gunshots outside.
Mm-hmm.
And then one night, we took a mortar round on the end of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But they were shooting at, and that's not the first time that happened, but they were shooting at the Air Force. Next to us was, it used to be an Army Air Force base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, here's the hospital, here's defense, here's the airfield.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been turned over to the Republic of Vietnam. The Arvins were running it. And so they were, so the Charlie was trying to hit the airfield to take down the runways and miss and hit the hospital. So we know they weren't shooting at us.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, they're not very good shots.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't, I mean, that just happens, but I can't say that I felt
mm-hmm.
threatened by any means.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I think we were too well protected to feel threatened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, we just knew if something was going to happen, they, you know, the guys would be there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I never had that concern.
Mm-hmm. And now you were officer, so you ranked higher than the corpsman, right? Was that ever an issue, or did you feel like you had some authority, or was it all more equal?
It was more equal. I mean, it really was, because like even on the ward or the ER, it didn't make any difference. We had our jobs, they had their jobs, and in between, then there was, I mean, we had certain things we only us could do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and those relied more in licensing, responsibilities. We passed the medications, they did the treatments.
Mm-hmm.
But if I got my medicines passed and he's still out doing wound care, I'm gonna go help him finish that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if he's got his wound cares done and I'm still passing medicines, he'll come help me pass medicines.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a real, I mean, this is the list of things that has to be done before we leave,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get through them one way or another, you know. And then, so it wasn't, I mean, they all, you know, that day they always called us LT, and we always called them usually by their first name.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Colonel Tardy would never allow that. You had to call him Specialist Jones or whatever the case was, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they never called us by our first names. They always called us LT.
Mm-hmm.
Or cap, or you know, whatever our rank was,
mm-hmm.
and that was you know, we thought that was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
But we never called them sergeant. Well, no, that's not true. The sergeants we called sergeant,
mm-hmm.
because they were I mean, they were career guys. I mean, that's, they'd earned that. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd earned that respect. But most of the, you know, like the corpsman, I mean, Dewey. I mean, I'm not called Dewey Sergeant or Specialist, you know, or, and same thing with Joe. And those guys that you worked with every day, that, it meant more to them to be called by their first name than, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So it was not any form of a disrespect not to call them by their rank. Mm-hmm. It was just that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they would never, like I say, the corpsmen would never call us by our first names. Mm-hmm. They were wonderful. They were good.
Mm-hmm. And did anybody, I guess, in your hospital date, or how did you find people to date? Was it the helicopter pilots or other officers?
Yeah, most of us dated outside the hospital. Mm-hmm. Most of them were the chopper pilots. And you know, most of it was just the group activities. I mean, Kat mm-hmm. was a chopper pilot, was a chopper group over there that we partied with probably the most. Mm-hmm. And some of us ended up dating or being with somebody more than the group, you know, somebody else and stuff, but it was just really different. I don't know how to explain it. It was kind of like being back in high school with that partying group again. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it didn't. Mm-hmm. It was just one night. I hate to even tell the story, but when we got to the point, you know, when we got on alert, we couldn't leave the compound. Mm-hmm. So they come over and pick us up in the choppers. Then somebody complained that these non-official choppers were landing on our helipad, and mm-hmm. what if they were had to bring in wounded, which, I mean, you can see helicopters coming. It's not like they're going to sneak up behind you. But they were just jealous because we were partying without them, I think. But anyway, so it got where they come over and just hover above the heliport, mm-hmm. and then we'd have to jump out, mm-hmm. break an ankle, do whatever, you know. Anyway, there was a lot of partying going on. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it was a release. It's something that had mm-hmm. to happen. But you, like anything else, if you can't do it one way, you're going to find another way to get it done. Mm-hmm. Stop partying wasn't the answer. I don't know that we would have survived if we would have stopped all that partying. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, I think part of it was just move, you know, just keep busy. Mm-hmm. Just keep busy and just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you hear from home a lot? Did that help?
Yeah. My mother is great. My mother was a great letter writer, mm-hmm. and in boxes. I mean, we got care packages. And of course, if you got a care package, it was everybody's care package. Uh-huh. So we got care packages quite a bit too. And Christmas was great. I mean, yeah. I got a Christmas tree and lights and ornaments, and I just got the whole spiel, you know. So yeah, that helped. Letters from home help, and you'd read them over, and you'd read them over, and you'd read them over again. You think, you know, Mother, I really don't care what you had for supper last night, but I mean, she just, it was wonderful just to get them. I mean, it was just like you were sitting there talking. And of course, it was difficult for us to, we didn't have email. We couldn't get on our computers and communicate. And for us to get a line, I probably called home twice the whole time I was over there, mm-hmm. to be able to get a line out to get through and stuff. So, yeah, mail was always important.
I think Peggy said that your mom made the best cookies.
Oh, my mother was a wonderful cook. She was. They'd come and, oh, you'd have this handful of crumbs. It didn't matter. Uh-huh. You know, it was just, yeah, she'd cook and send us all kinds of stuff.
And were you there the full 12 months then?
I wasn't. I was there 9 months, I think. When they made the decision to close down the hospital, mm-hmm. And I'm not exactly sure on the times, but if you had so many months in country, you had a choice of whether you wanted to stay and finish or leave. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking it was like 8 months. If you had eight or more months in, you could go. You could either stay or go home. And actually it was in March, and I decided I wasn't going to stay. Mm-hmm. You know, I just figured that I had a wonderful time, but it was time to go home, and nothing else was going to be as good as what we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like at the end, so all of my friends were leaving. It wasn't like, I mean, if Peg and Mary and everybody went up to Saigon, then I probably would have gone with them, but we were all at the end of our tour. So I decided to come home, and then I had an opportunity to leave early. I didn't even stay till the end of the hospital because it was my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary. So I thought if I could get home by that, then the whole family would be there and be a surprise. And so that's what I did. So I left, oh, I don't know, week and a half earlier than the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
But.
And where did you come to when you got back to the States?
Came through San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
We came through Hawaii and then came into San Francisco. And yeah, that was difficult. We had been told when we got on the flight, and again, we're in Class B's, not to wear our uniforms outside of San Francisco Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had all packed, you know, another set of clothes with us and changed our clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Left the airport in civilian clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Which was very disheartening.
Mm-hmm.
Very disheartening. And you know, up until the 10th anniversary, which was 11 years ago, when they dedicated the Women's Memorial,
mm-hmm.
I bet I didn't talk about Vietnam three times to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
When you come back and you just didn't. I actually, when I came back, I went back to the University of Minnesota initially, and one of the classes I was in was I want to say sociology, it doesn't matter, I don't remember. But anyway, one day we went in and they started talking, and it wasn't like we were studying, I don't know what we were supposed to be studying, but they got off on this topic of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got up and walked out. I couldn't, they didn't know what the hell they were talking about, you know, and I didn't have the energy to set them straight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, early on I had just said to my, not like I said it out loud, but I realized that I didn't want to speak to Vietnam, about Vietnam to anybody who didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't worth the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, in this class, I just got up and walked out. Well, the next day, when I came back, I got up to the instructor and said, I just want to tell you I left because I could not participate in that conversation with Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Vietnam vet, and I've been back 3 months, and I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I wish you would have told me that before. And I said, I just couldn't. I said, I'm telling you now because I don't want to get docked for the time yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, and fortunately, I think he understood. I think he certainly would have much rather I stayed and got into this tangle with the rest of them, but I wasn't up for it. I didn't have that kind of energy to do that then. And about the only person I ever talked about it was my girlfriend's husband, who came back, who was a grunt over there,
mm-hmm.
and came back. And David and I would talk about it a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, he was kind of in the same, I don't want to think about it. And because I just said, David, I just don't know how you did it. I mean, he was a platoon leader out there and on the search and destroy missions, and I just, oh my God. So anyway, I was more that I was trying to get a perspective on what he was going through out there than anything. But anyway, so it was those years. I mean, we just never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
It, not with my family, not with,
mm-hmm.
and they never asked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that I would not have talked if somebody would have asked me, but nobody wanted to know about it, and I didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of. But since the dedication, it's been much more open.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, and I don't talk about it. Like, when Mary and Peggy and I get together, we'll say a few things. I mean, I'll remember kind of a thing. It was kind of funny. Mary's has two girls that are grown now, but
a little while ago we were talking around the pool or something, and Melanie says, you know, you guys never really talk about that. Mm-hmm. She says, lately maybe, but you guys just never, mm-hmm. I don't remember hearing anything about it growing up. And we just didn't. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the war before you went? I mean, Ted had already happened.
Ted had already happened. To be real honest with you, and I really didn't know that much about mm-hmm. it. You know, I just didn't. I mean, I knew where the country was, and I knew we were over there, and mm-hmm. But I didn't know a whole lot about it. I just didn't. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, what did the being over there change that? Then, I guess.
Well, it does. I mean, it did. But again, we never talked about the war over there.
Mm-hmm.
We never talked about. I mean, you know, you get the guys in and you hear, you make comments like, God, what a waste. Mm-hmm. You know, and why the hell are we still here? And can you, you know, those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it. I mean, it was a release. Yes, I'm having trouble understanding all of this, but that was it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, I honestly believe, and I agree with, in the book, A World of Hurt, she had said in there too, we just didn't have the energy.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard enough to be there and see these kids mutilated like it was.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had had these ongoing discussions about how bad it was or how wrong it was for us to be there, I don't know that we could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree 100%, even though at the time we didn't say, we're not going to talk about this because it's going to be hard to take care of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that conversation certainly never took place, but I think that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I say, I mean, we partied with the chopper pilots. I mean, we lost good friends over there. Mm-hmm. We had a dust-off unit that worked with us. And Jimmy came in one day, and his gloves were melted to his hands. And, I mean, it was probably the only time I can remember being physically ill
mm-hmm.
when they brought him through the ER doors. Because I'd played cards with this guy two nights before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was to the point that we couldn't do anything with the gloves. They had to take him to the OR.
Mm-hmm.
And we really didn't believe that. At least at the time when we saw this, that he was going to be able to salvage his hands. Well, we had Norm Netty was one of our orthopods, and Norm was excellent. And he was one of our few surgeons that had completed all the fellowships and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a hand surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And he was older. I mean, he had been pulled out of private practice mm-hmm. and come over there. But Norm had Jimmy in surgery. Oh gosh, it was 12, 14, 16 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was horrendous. In the last that we knew, Jimmy had not fine movement, but gross movements of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he even left Vietnam with his hands
mm-hmm.
was attributed only to Norm Netty, because
mm-hmm.
anybody else would have taken him off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But so when you see things like that, you just got to think, you know, why? Why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And one night, they had sent out a chopper, and there were three levels. If it was a GI, the guys went no matter what the weather was like.
Mm-hmm.
If it was, if it was a dead GI, if the weather was bad, they would wait.
Mm-hmm.
And the maintenance